mid-90s. By the mid-90s, the club had reinvented itself for the second time. Previously, we were a heavy rock venue. Now the Rock House was a student venue that also did rock. I had plenty of money but did not waste it on flash cars. Instead, it went on properties. I had 7 in all, including a delightful cottage in Branscombe, Devon. It was great being able to escape from the stress of running one of the East Midlands' most successful clubs and walk on the pebble beach and take buttered scones in the tea room. Change was about to take place in my personal life. I had been going out with Liz, who worked part-time in the kitchen and was a student at the university. She had graduated and moved to London to study at the Royal College of Art. We stayed together and I went to see her when I had time. When she came back to Derby, I got a house on the hill in Allestree. This was another good radio site overlooking the city. We used to go out to the Dial and to the Full Moon restaurant and to the Tea Room on Daly Park. We also went on 2 camping holidays in America, staying at the state parks each night. During our trip to New York, we camped on a building site near Wall Street, dosing in the back of the hire car and cooking on a stove in the street. Liz would go shopping and I would go onto the roof of the World Trade Center with my radio. It was amazing up there in the autumn. Decision time had arrived. I had been against the idea of marriage and had put it off for as long as possible. I was now 36, Liz 28. We were at our cottage in Branscombe on a walk over the fields. As we crossed over the airstrip at the farm overlooking the village, she said, "Either we get married soon or it's over." She wanted kids. I did not see myself as a family man, but she said she was wasting her life with me and it was time I showed some commitment. This became known as the airfield ultimatum. I felt I was being pushed along by events, but because I was weak, I agreed and we got married in December 1994. This to me was the start of what would be a slow demise that took 10 years to reach its ultimate conclusion. Previously, life was fun and nothing was important. Now it was serious shit. Liz became pregnant and had a son called Harvey in the summer of 1995. Our student night was still going, but there were signs that it may be about to drop in numbers. Thatcher came out with an idea to outlaw illegal raves and stop outdoor parties. Michael Howard was the Home Secretary. He made a speech that was intended to wage war on the party people. In the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act of 1994, it was proposed to make it an offence for 3 or more people to meet, and it gave the police the power to break up gatherings of more than 3 people if the PIG had reasonable grounds to suspect that a rave was about to take place. A rave was defined as a musical event which was predominantly characterized by regular beats. The police could also seize sound equipment and charge the owners for its disposal. I decided that we should fight this bill, so we had a banner put above Reliance shop door saying "Kill the Bill Demo Hyde Park, London" and the date. All our flyers and posters had details of the demo and how to get there. It was during this time that I got my first taste of what would become a recurring theme. I was giving out flyers at the uni for our student night in the refectory. This was dangerous because if Matt McGuinness were to catch me, I would be thrown out. I handed a flyer to a youth. He was tall and well-dressed. He said, "Not interested, mate." I said, "You may not be interested in the student night, but you may be in what's written on the back of flyer." He looked at the advert for a coach trip to London to protest about the criminal justice bill. He threw the flyer on the floor and said, "Gath the crusty bastards." I had not occurred to me that a student could be so right-wing. I am sure that this moment spelt the end of the glory days for me. A new generation of students were coming through the ranks who were not rebellious. In fact, they liked the status quo, and I don't mean the band. I wanted to tell him to fuck off, but that would have been no way to talk to a potential customer. This was the first moment that I realized that my way of doing things was no longer relevant to the younger generation. It worried me because instead of the Rock House having a general appeal, it was starting to have the reputation of a bit of a dive. We went on the bus trip, threw bottles of piss at the police in Downing Street. The police marched us round all day in the hot sun, but made sure there were no shops open to get water and no toilets, in order to humiliate demonstrators. I managed to get the police a kicking by allegedly directing with a megaphone a crowd to charge the short shield units on Hyde Park. Police were stripped of their uniforms and dragged through the horse galloping sand at the edge of the park. They were chased off the park and it seemed like a small victory. Took a load of photos. After 4 years our student night was beginning to dwindle. Mark Leslie decided to leave, so I asked Will Hollinghead to DJ instead. The numbers continued to drop, everyone was going to the Blue Note. I had made the mistake of allowing one of their DJs to work with Will, but actually he was spreading rumors that the night was moving to the Blue Note. It was a cold night just before Christmas, we only had about 80 people in and was freezing and no atmosphere. From having 600 students in every week, we were almost empty. Stan the doorman said, "Mate, this just ain't working." I agreed. I went on a microphone at midnight and said with great sadness that I would be closing early. We rang up Eclipse and said, "Would you let our customers in free as we were shutting?" They said yes. So everyone, including the staff, went down to Eclipse. I could have cried. The glory days had definitely ended. It was going to be a struggle from now on. The staff said it was over and I had lost my relevance. I said to them, "Watch this. I guarantee I will put 600 in here in a week." I decided on a mad promotion for the following Wednesday, 20p entry and 20p pint all night. I contacted the brewery to get some promotional beer, but they only gave one barrel. I put posters and placards all over Derby. This act of desperation worked in so far as it rammed. We got 650 in, but we were understaffed deliberately and it took too long to get served. It created bad feelings, so the week after, when it was 50p all night, we only got 150 and we were losing money. Debts were beginning to rack up. By the start of 1996, we only had Smokescreen that was doing any trade and we had to give them half the door. I felt the Rock House Club had run its course. Students were going to Matt McGuinness Union bars, not our place. We were in the shit big time and I had to do something quick or go back to Rolls Royce and work on a fucking lathe again. I went on a ski holiday with my mates as usual and decided that I would apply for a radio license to broadcast legally for a month, then have a massive party and close down the Rock House. I applied to the radio authority for a license and was amused. It was granted because of my alleged involvement in pirate radio. I placed an advert in the local paper for presenters and engineers. This would be an expensive project, but I wanted to at least try it before I was forced back into the real world.